Hi, and welcome to Fashion Talks, the podcast about observing the world through the lens of fashion. I'm your host, Donna Bishop. Hello, hello. I so appreciate you joining me. Today, my guest is Amber Dawn Bear-Robe, member of the Siksika Nation. Amber was recently granted the Canadian Arts and Fashion Changemaker Award. She is also Assistant Faculty of Native Art History in the Museum Studies Department at the Institute of American Indian Arts and Fashion Show Program and Director for the Southwestern Association for Indian Arts, both of these in Santa Fe, New Mexico. It is an amazing conversation. Let's get right to it. Amber Dawn, thank you so much for joining me. I am so looking forward to this conversation.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm thrilled to be here.
So let's start at, I'd love for you to give a bit of a snapshot of your journey of curating Indigenous fashion. Give us a bit of context for how you got to where you are today.
Well, it actually started with my interest in contemporary Indigenous art. And when I went to college right after high school, my major was textiles, was fiber arts. And it wasn't until I didn't know anything about Native art. The only thing I knew about Native art was what was on my father's wall, which I saw is very cliche and tacky, and I didn't like it at all. I didn't know that anything Native art existed outside of that until one class, one day, a professor took us to the Glenbow Museum to see the exhibition Indigena, which was the first group Indigenous art show curated by two Indigenous curators, Leanne Martin and Gerald McMaster. And I'm telling you, it blew my world. People have these like, oh, this moment changed my life. This moment changed my life because I had never seen contemporary Native art before. Just your cliche teepees and headdresses and ledger art. So that is just one point of how come representation is so important. I was 19 years old. So then I carried on. That really dictated the rest of my life in terms of being immersed in contemporary Indigenous fashion. So by college, I was making it. And then I had my first kind of curatorial experience after college, not me as the curator, but being curated into an exhibition and working closely with the curator. I had no idea what that meant. And then that just carried on. I did a Indigenous curatorial work study at the Banff Center for Arts, where they held their first Indigenous thematic residency, which included 30 Indigenous artists from Canada, the United States, New Zealand, Australia, and Mexico. And then it just carries on. Then I went to graduate school. And so I went on to graduate school and then basically just made my academic aspect of contemporary Indigenous art, just flesh that out. And then curation, and where I am now is because contemporary Indigenous art really straddles the border in terms of when you're looking at textile work as art, you really emerge into wearable art, which I know that isn't unique just to Indigenous fashion, but moving to Santa Fe, New Mexico, it just basically, curating Indigenous fashion extended from curating Indigenous art to curating Indigenous fashion to curating fashion shows featuring Indigenous designers from Canada and the United States.
What drew you specifically to fashion? And actually, I'm going to spring a question on you. I often ask people, you know, when did you have a moment where you realized that fashion held more power than just material that protected your body from the elements? Like, do you have a moment where you realized that fashion had more power than just this basic cover my frame?
I can't point to a specific moment. I think that in curation and working with Indigenous artists and working in the field, there has all, clothing has always been powerful. Clothing has always been important. When you look at the importance of the ghost dance dresses, for example. So there wasn't, I've always seen Indigenous clothing as powerful. And I remember when I was interning at the Glenbow Museum, when I was in college, one of my cousins, I was looking through these historic photos that were behind, they weren't for public show, but I was looking for them. My father was in them, my grandmother, and my cousin could point out, oh, that is your family's. He could point out my relatives by the beaded design work. So to me, that is an example of the power of clothing, the power of what we wear, the communication beyond a trend or a fad. So I've never really seen, there wasn't a very aha moment.
It just was always thus.
It was just always thus, exactly.
And what is a ghost dance dress? Do you mind just sharing what that is?
Oh no, you're going to make me get into my art history.
Bring it.
Okay. So
quick art history sidebar.
Okay. The ghost dance dress was, it wasn't just a ghost dance dress. There was ghost dance clothing for men and for women. And their Wovoka had a dream of this certain song and the certain dress to wear in battle of in battle with the white army. This is the Battle of Little Bighorn. And I hope I'm getting my history right here, but it was a clothing that was inspired by Wovoka, by a dream, through visions, and the ghost dance outfits would protect the wearer from bullets. And then the songs would also enforce and protect the individuals who were at war or who were being attacked. So that is an example of the power of dress, or the symbology of dress. But also, I could go down, you know, and so this is bringing me to a point that I wanted to highlight as well, is that this needs, looking at the ghost dance creation, has never scholarly been looked at from a fashion field. It's been endlessly, it's great, I'm not saying it's negative, but it has been looked at from an anthropological lens, ethnographic, and all of that, but not from a fashion history point of view, which I have, when I have the time, I would love to look at that. Instances such as that from a fashion perspective, because there's this ideology with Native dress that it stays the same. There's this tradition, it doesn't change. And of course, fashion is all about change. And so that perception of Indigenous design never changing is completely not true. And the ghost dance outfits is just a really strong moment to capture in time to make as an example. That was a very long answer to your question.
No, it's all good. And as you're talking, it reminds me of a bit of a chat we were having before we got on here, which is how Indigenous fashion is obviously not new, but it is a bit of a new fashion conversation. And so often we see it in museums or galleries with pottery and artifacts and art and that elasticity, that ever changing of fashion. I hear you saying that is obviously something that is part of Indigenous fashion as well, but it's kind of giving the world a paradigm shift that it is that, like, there is a history, but it is also very contemporary as well.
Yes, exactly. It's everything that you just mentioned. And again, it's just the way that Indigenous fashion has been framed. It's been framed from a very directive perspective to otherize Indigenous fashion, basically, otherize Indigenous clothing. And but language also goes hand in hand with this as well. When you look at assimilative movements or assimilative programming from colonizers and boarding schools, etc., language was a huge part of that. And so when you talk about Indigenous fashion, it sounds a little, it's not the right word because it's more than just fashion. Same with Indigenous couture. You know, I use the word, the French word, because people understand what that means. But right. there is a whole other level of understanding from Indigenous fashion, from a different language that has a different symbolism when you apply a certain language, of course, to fashion. And that's general information.
And you use the term indigenizing fashion a lot when you describe your work. Can you talk a little bit about what the importance of that term is? Like, what is it about the term indigenizing that really resonates with you in terms of describing the work you do?
Yeah, you know, indigenizing was my word of choice to use instead of decolonization, because I'm like, how do you decolonize? That was an empty word for me. So I started using indigenizing instead. Decolonizing, what does that even mean? That we go back to a time where we didn't have technology and we lived with, no running water and electricity. Yeah. I don't want to go back to those times. those are rough times. So to me, indigenizing was just a better term to explain what I'm trying to do with Indigenous fashion in terms of representation, indigenizing space, which to me seemed more achievable than decolonizing.
Well, and it has a proactivity energy to it. It's a moving forward as opposed to retroactively trying to undo something.
Yes, exactly.
Now you're in Santa Fe and you are from Alberta. You work across North America with designers all over the continent. What do we need to know about the difference between the United States and Canada in terms of language you might use or just the state of Indigenous fashion and representation? Is it very different in Santa Fe than it is you were just here in Canada for CAFA? Is it very different where you are?
Absolutely. Representation of Indigenous people in all trajectories is completely different in Canada than it is in the United States. And I like to put it this way. The space and time and representation and acknowledgement that America provides to African Americans is the level of representation Canadian Indigenous people get in Canada. It's not relocated to 1 hour a day on NPR. It's on CBC, ingrained with all of their programming. It's not something you're like, oh my gosh, you're surprised to see it. It really is Indigenous issues, people, cultures have been really immersed and ingrained throughout Canadian culture. And that just has not happened in the United States. Even if you go outside of the Southwest, I do live in a sort of native bubble being in the Southwest, which is Navajo and Pueblo land. You do not have this type of artistic community, native artistic community in other parts of America, whereas you can see definitely pockets of that all over Canada. So and then that's also represented with terminology. Of course, language is extremely important. And in America, we use the term Indian is still widely used on a personal, public, professional, academic platform. Maybe not so much academia, but I work, and I take that back because I teach Native Art History at the Institute for American Indian Arts. I also work, I produce the fashion shows, the fashion program for the Southwestern Association for Indian Arts. Whereas when you go to Canada, wasn't Indian Affairs changed to Indigenous? Affairs. So you have Canada changing its movement along with the representation. So they both feed each other. And so in Canada, the term Indigenous is the term to use, Indigenous, Inuit, Métis. And in Canada, it really primarily is Native American if you are, quote, woke, and Indian if you just the basic terminology. And you'll see the term, from my experience, I'm just speaking from my experience, that the term Indian, the further east you go, the more that that word is used.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
And how does it feel to swing between those two nations? Like, is there a tension moving from using the word indigenous to using Indian when you are in Santa Fe? Like, is it I feel awkward just saying it, to be honest with you. Like, is it, how does it feel to move between that language in your work?
So it's interesting because when I first moved, when I first started going to graduate school in Tucson, Arizona, I was adamant about don't use the term Indian or Native, even Native. I was very adamant with my colleagues. And this is when Aboriginal was the word to use. And I was like pro-Aboriginal, the Aboriginality of Aboriginalists. And then I started to peter out on that fight because it just was a losing fight. Because there is also Indigenous people or Native Americans who are embracing and love the word Indian, which is fine. And of course, you use the term Indian on your homeland and with your friends and stuff. But it was a losing battle for me. But I used to be very aware of it. But since then, it's all around me. It's what's in reflected in the social structure of the area that I live, which is Santa Fe, New Mexico. So in terms of the push and pull, I'm used to it in America now. I don't shudder. I don't have an instant repulse reaction. But when I go up to the United States, so give two quick examples. When I was pre-COVID, this woman asked me what I did, and I'm like, "Oh, I work for the Southwestern Association for Indian Arts." So I said where I work, and she was appalled. And this woman was a Canadian, and she was appalled that I used the word Indian. But she wasn't even, this individual was not Native. So that really demonstrated to me the level of change that's happening up in Canada. And then recently, when I was co-curating the exhibition Fashion Fictions with Stephanie Rebuck, at the Vancouver Art Gallery, in my writing, in my paper, I was using the term Native American because I did need to distinguish between working with Native American designers and Indigenous designers to show just the two different areas where these designers are coming from. And I guess one of the editors was extremely uncomfortable that I used the term Native American. So it's funny how the reaction that I get from terminology is much different than the reaction or non-reaction that I get in the United States, which is, I'm not saying one is good or bad, but it's interesting. I have a feeling in 10 years from now, everyone's going to be going back to the term Indian.
Really? We'll see. Wow.
We'll see. America.
I want to bring the conversation back a little bit to fashion. When you were here for CAFA in your speech, you mentioned, the atelier of the Indigenous designer. And right. Atelier is obviously a term that we very much associate with, like, French couture fashion history. And again, as we were talking before we came on, you talked about the lack of academic writing about Indigenous fashion. And I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about what the impact of having that lack of academic documentation is. Obviously, it's not that the history didn't exist. It just hasn't been documented for us in a way that is in, I don't know, would you say like in our libraries, in our institutions? What is the impact on the fashion community with that lack of writing that you were talking about?
Well, the lack of writing is the lack of representation. And the lack of representation means the lack of knowledge and awareness by the larger demographic, the larger public. So when you look at art history, when you look at Native art history is extremely new to the canon of art history, which, when you look at art history, it's always been a very white male Euro-Western point of view. So adding diversity to art history is a step, but then adding Native art history is very new to the academic table. And then, so fashion history, Indigenous fashion history it's not even anybody's thought when it comes to art history. If you're looking at fashion, fashion history under the umbrella of art history. I know fashion history is looked under many different academic umbrellas, but I'm specifically talking about art history because Indigenous design, Indigenous clothing has been looked at and studied, endlessly from an anthropological lens. So what does that mean? That means that Indigenous clothing is the history of our clothing is not seen as fashion. The history of our clothing is viewed through an anthropological lens, meaning looked at as an object, looked at lesser than, looked at something to be collected, looked at as something that was stolen rightly to study, or stolen rightly because of the dying, many reasons, the vanishing, quote, vanishing race. So you have the history has been really dictated from a white Euro-Western viewpoint. And then when you're looking at fashion history proper, or I shouldn't say proper, when you're looking at how fashion history is academically looked at in fashion theory, you know, Indigenous, there's such a language deconstruction and discussion within fashion history itself, let alone Indigenous fashion history. So when you're in terms of writing and talking about discussing, there's no real academic scholarly discourse for people to be founded on when you're looking at panel discussions or when you're looking at different conversations are happening with Indigenous fashion in exhibitions. I'm often asked, what is Indigenous fashion? Well, there's no one way to answer that. But just the question in itself is symbolic of the lack of awareness of the diversity of different Indigenous nations. Of course, the diversity of Indigenous people is going to give diversity of Native fashion. And there's no one way to tie Native fashion into a neat bow and say, this is what it is. But what I can say is that Native fashion, Native designers are the original fashion designers of North America. And I always give this example, but I love this example. You do not get more couture than killing or hunting a walrus or a seal, gutting and cleaning the intestines to a pristine state of a material to work with, and then to make the sinew, to stitch the intestines together to create with other fur or feathers, whatever it may be, to create your own design of a gut skin parka. You get more couture. You don't get any more couture than that. One of a kind. Everything's made by hand. And it's an absolutely phenomenal, exquisite engineering, complicated technique. And that is, those gut skin parkas are not looked at as fashion. They're looked at as, studied, dissected from a very object-based lens. So that's what happens when you don't have writing, you don't have the diversity of looking at Indigenous fashion, which is what I'm trying to do. And so that these discussions about Indigenous fashion is beyond, it's much deeper. There's many different layers than the business of it. The business, of course, is extremely important, but it's more than just this beauty, the layer of beauty or the layer of appropriation or the layer of, many different discussions around Indigenous fashion. But the discussions that you see now about Indigenous fashion are fairly surface level. There's not really anything going deeper, and that's because it has not been written about from a scholarly level. So I have a lot of work to do.
You're going to be very busy, Amber Dawn. Well, and I was just thinking as you were talking that I bet if you looked at in any high school or fashion school, assignment on the history of North American fashion, it will be so colonial heavy. Like I'm speaking anecdotally. I have not looked at any, assignments, but I just thought, wow, like I bet none of them talk about Indigenous fashion in terms of the history of North American fashion. I think I was reading something, maybe I'm about to quote yourself back to you, which is always exciting, about how at the Met Gala, when the theme was American fashion, there was no, like slim to none, certainly no high profile Indigenous fashion via designer or any representation there.
Yes. I specifically was so like, I got to watch the Met Gala when it was the American fashion theme. Cause I'm like, I was expecting numerous appropriated outfits, but I didn't see one thing. I saw one thing that was kind of close. I was especially looking for Ralph Lauren to see what the design would be, but there was no reference to Native North American people or art or culture or Indigenous design other than Kwana Chasing Horse, who was one of the guests of the Met Gala. But to have an American themed show, gala, and to not basically just erase, which is what America has done, erase the fact that Native Americans were here before it was America, to me is that wasn't helpful in the discussion of appropriation. It was just ignoring it and sweeping it under the rug. But people saw there was no real thematic with the American fashion. It was all over the place. And so to me, that's very symbolic of when there is no one way to describe American fashion, but what is rooted to this land of American design and clothing is Native North American people and our design and our design language, which, you know, that's in a whole other route to go down too. Because when you look at when in the early 20s, when people like Renee, the curators of the Natural History Museum in North America.
We'll put a link down in the show notes so people can, you know, take a look at what you're talking about.
Okay. So just briefly that there was these individuals, certain individuals were demanding and calling for an specific, unique, independent from Europe, an American design language, and we're calling to, we need to create this. And we're encouraging designers, emerging designers, to go to the natural history museums to study Pueblo pottery and Navajo textiles to inform an American design language. So when you look at the history of appropriation, when you look at the foundation of America, how America has really used, quote, the American Indian, that's what differentiates us. The American Indian differentiates America from the rest of the world. But there's no nod to that in a healthy, robust conversation, really committed way. You just see the stereotypical Indian head or the typical generic Navajo design. Anyways, kind of went off topic, but it's interesting that there's no, it is such a huge part of American culture and American design, yet there's no mention of it. Indians are everywhere, but they're nowhere. That was quoted from Paul Schott Smith.
Well, and I mean, there are so, I'm just thinking we could talk for 3 hours, but obviously we don't have that, unfortunately, that time right now. But I want to touch upon a couple of things. You've been, since 2014, you've been with the Southwest Association of Indian Arts. Do I have that right?
Yes. Yeah.
Did the first fashion show in 2014. Paint us a picture of what was that first fashion show like, and how have things evolved, changed, moved in a positive or not so positive direction? What has happened in the past 9 years as it pertains to what you are seeing with Indigenous fashion?
Well, I will say I did do a couple of fashion shows before SWAYA in Santa Fe.
Okay.
And I want to point this out because it's important. So the first two fashion shows I did were for the Museum of Contemporary Native Arts. So it was really a contemporary Native art institution that supported supported a contemporary Indigenous fashion show. There's many different reasons for that. Won't get into it, but Lloyd Kevenu is one of them, IAI. And so then moving into the first fashion show for SWAYA in 2014, I had brought it to the director at the time and was like, oh yeah, hummed and hawed. And then, you know, eventually it was like, yeah, actually let's do it. At first it was no, then it's like, yeah, let's do it. So I was given, I mean, talk about shoestring budget, like literally probably
$20. Did you even have the string of the shoe?
Yeah. No, I didn't even have the string. It was on a Saturday, I believe. We just overtook models and makeup and hair people and designers. We overtook the Swaya offices and did hair and makeup. And I was rehearsing outside of the Swaya office. And there was, if you've been to Indian Market, Swaya Market before, you'll understand what I'm saying. But if you haven't, it's just the downtown, the center plaza area is full of booths of artists selling artwork. And all the roads are shut down except for, you know, golf carts. So I had to put the models in the back of a U-Haul truck in order to get them from the Swaya office to Cathedral Park, which was an outdoor beautiful park in the downtown plaza area, the location for the very first fashion show featuring four designers. It was Orlando Dugai, Jamie Okuma, Shosho Esquaro, who's Canadian, and Bethany Yellowtail. And it was chaotic, but it was fun. And there, I was, you know, I was expecting a handful of people there. There was definitely a good wealth of people there, but it was, you know, went back to the office. It was a rush of energy, a rush of feeling and emotion and feeling successful, and went back to the office and there's makeup and hair and underwear everywhere. that was the very first one. And then the second one, it was quite obvious that the crowd had more than doubled, at least doubled, in terms of the audience people, the number of people in the audience. And then the numbers just kept growing and growing and growing, and the demand and the fight for first seats, front row. And then when the director at the time stated, we need to start charging, I'm like, oh, we can't start charging. Nobody's going to pay for that. And, you know, we, even to this day, when, you know, we had this special VIP, this diamond experience of the fashion show. It $5,000 a ticket. It included more than, you know, it was a very curated exclusive event. We're like, nobody's going to, that's crazy. And the VIPs and the exclusive seating, they're always the first to go. So I'm still always shocked, but I guess I shouldn't be.
And has the number of, obviously the number of designers has increased. Have you seen anything in terms of the themes of the designs? Like, obviously fashion is ever evolving and elastic, like any cultural enterprise. Is there anything that you've kind of reflected upon as you've seen the designs walk down the runway that you're like, oh, like, I haven't seen that before, and that references that. Like, have the designs, they must just explode every year as well.
The designs absolutely do. I'm so excited to see what the designers bring to the table. I often don't get to see them because I'm backstage running around. But
the curse of the organizer, Amber Dawn.
Yes. Yes. Usually I'll get more detailed looks when I go through the images that are taken backstage and front of stage. But there definitely is, each designer has their trademark that I'm like, okay, that has got to be an Orlando Dugai, that has got to be a Jamie Okuma, or that has got to be a Katherine Blackburn. And so each designer and I'm pretty good now at spotting who the designer is, but every year it just changes because we have new designers to the runway. Designers are experimenting and changing. And I'm sorry, what was the original question?
Just about the themes or the like what you see visually with the designers, if there's anything that you kind of notice year to year, okay, or something that's really resonating, or, you know, stepping into really embracing something that you see kind of growing year over year.
What I see growing year over year is the increase of Indigenous streetwear. I see an increase in ready to wear. I also see an increase, though, of just creating a show. Like, each individual designer for their set will bring it all to the runway. That's from music to the models to whatever the collection is, or even a performative and a more of a performative collection, which I'll say is Catherine Blackburn. When she was first on the runway with her New Age Warrior twins, it was just blew everybody away. And so I think what I'm getting to is there's so much diversity across the designer field with these shows, that but it just brings such a rich visual experience. But also there's really a performative component to the Swaya Indigenous fashion shows. And I think something that's very important to point out too, that I think first timers to the fashion show or people new to Indigenous fashion, is you're going to see fashion that really bends your mind of what you thought Native fashion is. You're not going to be like, oh, that's obviously a Native design. There's buckskin beads and leather. That is what is, I think I see really, the design is really pushing that envelope in terms of really being modernist in when you look at the, if you look at the modernism as breaking away from what's conventional, breaking away from what is expected of. And so designers are just constantly moving that thermometer, just more pushing it, and you know, to really be on the platform within fashion and not relegated to this idealistic vision of what Native fashion should be.
And I'm so grateful for you taking the time. I know you are under very busy, busy, busy times right now. So thank you so much for joining me here today. What else are you working on that's lighting you up right now?
Oh no, we're over already?
I know. We can do part 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, a dozen. Yeah.
Well, definitely please invite me back, because right now what I'm working on is Swaya's first Indigenous Fashion Week, which is taking place May 2nd to 6th. And I know that competes with the Met, doesn't compete, it's the same time as the Met Gala, but this is the date will change in the following years. But for this year, we wanted to launch this as this is our Met Gala. And then I also have some interesting, I'm co-curating a show at the Autry, which opens in the fall. I have a lot going on. I could also do a whole series on just the lots going on, but please invite me back for the Indigenous Fashion Week taking place in March, May of
2024. Amber, if people want to follow you and learn more about all of the many, 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 many amazing things that you're doing, where are the best places for people to find you?
You can find me at on Instagram at Swaya Native Fashion. That's SWAIA Native Fashion. Also on Facebook, or Swaya Fashion. And you can find me personally on Instagram at Amber Dawn Gold, AmberDawnGold. I also want to say I'm always looking for Indigenous talent in design and creation, as well as models. And we work with models of all different ages, sizes, colors, genders. So please reach out if you are wanting to participate in some way. And that's adbarob@swaya.org. And I just want to stress that I don't speak for all Native designers or all Native people. This is just my very personal perspective on all of this. So I, by all means, I'm not the final word.
Varied thoughts and opinions, and I'm so grateful for you sharing yours today. And all those will link in the show notes so people can find them. Amber Dawn, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you so much for joining me here on Fashion Talks. If you enjoyed today's episode, please share it with your friends, your family, on your networks. It would mean the world to me. Fashion Talks is done in partnership with the Canadian Arts and Fashion Awards. You can find out more about them at CAFA Awards, CAFAWARDS on Instagram. This episode was produced by Jason Perrier. You can find him on Instagram at @JasonPerrier. You can follow the pod at Fashion Talks Pod, and you can follow me at ThisIsDonnaB, all of us on Instagram. I hope you will join us again next week. Thank you so much, and have a great day.